Hello and welcome back to That Girl Is Going Places. My name is Marin. If you are coming from Sadie's platform, I'm so excited to have you listening today. Today I'm here with Sadie from She Persisted, which is an amazing podcast all about teen mental health. And I am so grateful that we get to talk about that today on my podcast. So Sadie, introduce yourself. And also something that I'm starting with the guests that I bring on is just having them share something they're manifesting with the title of the podcast, That Girl Is Going Places, kind of where you're going right now.
Yeah. Well, first off, thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here and sit down with you. So a little bit about me. My name is Sadie. I'm 18 and I'm from the Bay Area, but I'm going to be moving to Philadelphia to study psychology at the University of Pennsylvania in August. So I feel like I'm starting to like mention that because I'm like not going to be in the Bay Area for too much longer. But yeah, I went through my own mental health journey, which we'll dive into. And after that, I started a podcast called She Persisted, where I talk all about teen mental health. So started by telling my own story and then having other teens come on and share theirs. And now it's really just a really great resource where experts and fellow individuals and role models, all these amazing individuals who have navigated their own mental health challenges, come on, share their tips and tricks and help you build your life worth living. And so yeah, that's what I spend the majority of my time doing. But yeah, very passionate about mental health and especially teen mental health. So that's kind of a little bit about me. Right now, I'm manifesting a couple of things. I'm like trying to think here, which ones I want to share. I really want to like get my, I love doing like social media management outside of the podcast. It was totally a skill that I like accidentally picked up and loved doing once I started the podcast and managing it on Instagram. So I really want to like build that up a bunch this summer and go into college and be like, okay, I have like a great job. Like don't have to like stress about any of that kind of stuff. And so that's like one goal. And then I am really trying to manifest going on a bunch of like big podcasts. I've been emailing people and being like, please have me as a guest. And they're never going to say yes. That's another thing that I'm manifesting right now. And then always manifesting show growth, like 24/7.
Yes, love.
But those are three things.
I love all of that. And I'm so glad that we're kind of in the same boat here, both young women, like doing something similar, kind of going out of the ordinary for our age range and just sharing what we're passionate about. So I'm so lucky to have another voice on. And I'm just so excited to have you. So like you mentioned, let's dive right into your own personal journey with mental health to start with, kind of where you started and now where you're at in the present moment.
Yeah. So I started struggling with depression and anxiety end of middle school, beginning of high school. And when it happened, I had no idea what was going on. I totally thought that it was just how everyone lived their life. I was pretty young at the time and I didn't know anyone else that had struggled with depression or anxiety. And so I thought everyone had this super negative outlook, was really ashamed and sad all the time. I just thought that was the way that the world worked. And I could understand that maybe other people didn't function that way, but it wasn't something that was in the cards for me. I was like, well, this is just how I've always lived my life. This is how it's meant to be, and it's not going to change. Looking back, I was always really confused about why I was struggling with depression, because I never had like a giant trauma. There was never a big loss that I experienced. I have two amazing parents that are married. I have a roof over my head. I was attending a great school. And so it was like, I have no reason to be depressed. What is going on here? I'm like defective, for lack of a better word, with my mental health. And so looking back, I can kind of understand what was going on, which was years of believing that I wasn't deserving of love and wasn't worthy of my parents or would never be good enough. And all of those things, just like we just talked about manifesting, you put out into the world the energy that you're experiencing. And so if you're constantly looking for validation, for the belief that you don't deserve love and you're not worthy, your world becomes really sad. And so that was totally what happened to me on a really large level. And so tried everything possible locally, whether it was hospitalizations, outpatient, group therapy, you name it, we tried it and nothing was really working. And so I ended up moving across the country to Boston halfway through my freshman year of high school and doing a residential program. And there was this super pivotal moment. I got there and I got into this room with like seven or eight doctors. And one of them, he asked me, he said, do you want to be here? And I was like, no, like I have to be here. I can't go back home because nothing is working. Like I just, I have to be here. It's not a choice. And he was like, well, this is a voluntary program. You see all these girls here. They want to be here and they want to work on themselves. They believe that that change is possible and they trust us to help them. And he told me that if I didn't see the wisdom in treatment, and this was specifically DBT or dialectical behavioral therapy, which I'm sure we'll dive into as well, and trust them to help them through their mental health journey, and have enough self-compassion to want to get better, that it wasn't going to work and that I couldn't be there. He also said that there were lots of programs that didn't work that way. I could go somewhere else. My parents could sign on a nice little dotted line and I could be there. So that kind of scared me. I was like, okay, I want to be here. I want to be in control of this. But I took the night, watched The Bachelor, ate some ice cream, and then I started the next day. But it was the first time in my treatment journey that I had enough self-compassion to want to get better. I never before that wanted to get better because I truly believed that I was meant to live that way. It was the first time that I trusted others to help me and believed that they could help me. And it was the first time that I really did see the wisdom in treatment and that whole process in DBT. And so I did 4 months there. And then I was at a therapeutic boarding school for about a year. And we talked about my headspace before I did treatment, but a year and a half later, I had this moment where I was like, this life that everyone told me I could live is, it's happened. I'm happy. I have fulfilling relationships. I have things I look forward to. I'm not depressed. And I love my life. My life is worth living. And so that was something, a place I would never thought I would get to. And so I wanted to share it with everyone because it was such a 180 from where I was at. And also reflecting back on that year, I heard from so many adults that it was possible for my life to change and to be happy and to make those changes, but there was a huge lack of teenagers that had truly done a 180 with their mental health and were on the other side and were telling me that it was possible. I didn't hear that from any teenager. So there were other girls that were like, it can get better. You got this, but they were still in their suffering. And so it wasn't very, I don't want to say it wasn't encouraging, but it was hard to believe there wasn't someone that had gone and completely done this whole journey and were good and on the other side of it. And so I wanted to change that. So that's kind of a little bit about my mental health journey in the podcast.
Yeah. So that's like perfect transition then, I assume, from you seeing that kind of gap in the market almost around you of the lack of teenagers talking about mental health and that full 180 that is possible for everyone. Mm-hmm. Then that's kind of where She Persisted came in. So go ahead and discuss how you created that, when you created that, what you're hoping to foster with the community there, and how it's become what it is today.
Yeah, so it's interesting. I started my podcast and told no one about it. My parents knew, my really close friends knew, but I never like announced it on my Instagram or was like, go listen, everyone, because I really wanted to, I don't want to say perfect my story, but create a narrative that I was really proud of and that was told exactly the way I wanted it to. And so I got this really great space to kind of explore the way I wanted to share my health, mental health journey and share others and create this platform that I was really proud of. And so I started at that point with no listeners in, I think it was 2019 in August, and sharing that with whoever happened to listen to it, whether it was teens or parents, anyone that was within the adolescent mental health world. And from there, it really changed. And within the past 6 months, I've really niched down. At some points I was like, any teenagers, anyone wanting to improve their life. And I had all sorts of different guests on that were sharing different forms of self-growth or their own stories. And since then, it's just really niched down to teen mental health. And whether that's parents of teens themselves, or other individuals hoping to improve their mental health, but really primarily it's a teen mental health resource. I'm like learning a lot about branding in my free time. So I'm like really like trying to like make it top notch. But yeah, so a teen mental health resource primarily directed at adolescents struggling and parents of teens. And I'm sure that'll shift as I go to college and get older myself, but all of this information comes from my own journey when I was a teenager. I think it'll just shift to being more applicable to also other college students and older individuals who are going through similar things that I am in the present, but mostly teens and parents. And then as far as what I'm hoping to achieve with it, but yeah, so first and foremost, continuing to grow the community. I think long term, there's a lot of different things. I had this really fun meeting yesterday with this other creator in the space, and we're talking about creating these little like mental health, I don't know if you would call them like journal prompts, but like planner templates, mm-hmm. where you can track your different emotions and behaviors you want to increase and decrease, because that's something I do on a daily basis in my bullet journal, but making that resource available to people in the She Persisted audience. So kind of making these things that I use to maintain my mental health available, whether that's myself or finding other resources. And then I had this idea, which was doing at some point, it's doing like scholarships for teens that need treatment completely from She Persisted. And so being able to put a teen girl through residential treatment, probably at the same place that I did treatment, because it was just so life-changing and helpful. But at some point, the podcast ever starts making money, because that's so expensive.
So hard, yeah.
Being able to do that would be like a crazy long-term goal. But yeah, first and foremost, continuing to grow, put out episodes with amazing individuals, and just create a super well-rounded resource. And then secondarily, make those resources more tangible, and kind of like expand from there. And then at some point, be able to really give back and talk about what I'm talking about, which is my own journey, and kind of give that to someone.
I absolutely love that. I love our brains think very similarly. I'm like such a business plan person too. Like, let's do short-term goals, longer, and then even longest. Like, mm-hmm. I think the same way. I'm like such a planner. So I love that you have goals, and I can't wait until the day where I get to hear you announce that you have given a scholarship to someone. I know you're going to get there. And I love how much it comes from a place of your experience. That's definitely where my podcast comes from too, kind of where people always ask me how I get the motivation and confidence and self-care and self-love. I'm just trying to put that back into a form of the podcast and discussing it really vulnerably, sensitively, openly. I don't know what the word is. So I'm just proud and inspired by all that you're doing with your podcast.
Thank
you. So back to teenage mental health as a whole, I think in my experience, I think it's a lot different from just adult mental health. And I think there's maybe a lack of priority in why teenage mental health specifically, when we're at this kind of weird transition age, why it's so important. So in your opinion, why do you think teenage mental health is super important to be aware of and get help for?
Yeah. So I'm going to come at this from like a couple different directions. Teenage mm-hmm. mental health is a super nuanced topic, and you can literally, people have so many different opinions about it. So I'm going to give mine, and I'm not a doctor. This is just like my experience. The first thing is that teens biologically feel emotions more strongly. They're known as being more moody and emotional, and it's because their brains are not fully developed. They're not fully able to make logical decisions from their prefrontal cortex. They're really coming from their amygdala, and which is the same part of your brain that navigates fight or flight mode. Mm-hmm. So when an adult is navigating mental health challenges, their brain is more matured and able to logically process through things, and even just emotions. They have a different brain and set of tools that they're able to work with, not even considering how many more years of practicing navigating emotions and relationships and being independent that they're able to pull from, but just biologically, teens are already at a loss. So, right, because similar to that is that parents are told for years to watch out for like the teenage years. Your kid's going to withdraw. They're going to be moody. You're going to like, oh my God, like it's just in our society, these things that could potentially be red flags for depression and anxiety we're told are normal. So a lot of the times it's not noticed and it goes untreated for a long time. And then the third thing I'm also going to say, I did this amazing recording yesterday, and when we think about teen mental health, there's this thing called oppositional defiance disorder, and anxiety and depression. All these things, to some extent, are normal things that teens experience. And I'm not going to like try to invalidate anyone that's struggling with anxiety or depression, but a certain amount of sensitivity and emotions and ups and downs during your teenage years are normal. And so I think not over pathologizing that, and instead really just supporting teens and telling them that it's okay and giving them resources instead of just trying to overanalyze and pathologize and figure out all of these different things, because it's part of the experience. And then the last thing I'm going to say is that everyone always has like those terrible teenage years experiences. Everyone's always like, oh, my teen years were rough. Like, you've heard every single adult say that. And it's because your teen years are really hard. You're transitioning between middle school and high school and then college. You're trying to find your tribe. You're not autonomous. You're still tied to your parents. You haven't found your family of choice. You're still with your family of origin. You're more emotionally sensitive. Most of the time look pretty awkward in your teen years. Like, all of these things are adding up against you.
And perfect so, storm.
Yeah, all of these things lead to potential teen mental health problems. And this is not even going into if we want to even analyze it from the perspective of the messages from society that are placed on, like, teenage girls, for example, with body image. So all of these things just make teens a lot more susceptible. And then when they're navigating them, going back to this last point, which is that we're still in our family of origin. You're not able to find your family of choice, which are individuals that you feel really support you and see you and are a very strong community. A lot of your life is decided for you, whether that's school or your home life. And so these things that normal adults would pull from to improve their mental health, which is strong relationships and things like self-care, things that improve their mental health, teens necessarily haven't decided or don't have the autonomy to do in their life. So it's not to say that that's not possible. I talk all the time about how I was able to make these changes and create that environment for myself without moving out, because I'm obviously still a teen. But it's harder, and it's definitely a mental barrier to know that you're not completely autonomous and your environment is really difficult and causing a lot of pain and you can't change it. So that is kind of how I would describe why teen mental health is an issue. And then the last thing that I'll say, I already said I would say last thing, but one more thing is that we all have mental health. We all have physical health and we all have mental health. So just even from that baseline, that every single teenager has mental health and they need to take care of it. And if we're not improving, we're digressing. And so we need to constantly be putting work into our mental health. That's why teen mental health is important. And the same thing, adult mental health, because if you're not progressing, you're digressing in your mental health. And so that is kind of across the board something that's true. But yeah.
I love how you explained all that. You are so eloquent in your words, and
I'm
just so happy to have someone so experienced and knowledgeable in this field explain that. And I'm in psych myself right now, and so learning about literally biologically, like, these are not excuses when we say that teens are moody. Like, it's on a physiological level, this is what's happening. We have no choice. We have little to no rational judgment developed yet. It's what it is. So
yeah.
I completely agree that it's a priority, and it should be, especially for our age group in this weird transitioning time. We have all these life factors going on, plus the biology, plus just the fact that everyone deserves mental health priorities. Again, it kind of combines for that perfect storm for why we are always so susceptible to having these issues. So as you explained, you went through a couple of different treatment options and have dabbled probably in almost everything. So I know one thing that you talk about a lot on your own podcast and Instagram is DBT. And then I think more commonly people have heard of CBT. So if you could explain the difference between those and some other treatment types that have been available to you in your own journey.
Yeah. So CBT stands for cognitive behavioral therapy. And it is, the best way to explain it is kind of, it's a school of thought where there's more to it, of course. People practice CBT and you can see CBT therapists, but really boiling it down, the belief that your thoughts impact your emotions, impact your, let me redo this wheel, your emotions impact your thoughts, which impacts your behaviors. Mm-hmm. So if you change your behaviors, your emotions will change. If you change your thoughts, your behaviors, your emotions will change. So if you're feeling depressed and you get out of bed and you do the opposite of what you're feeling, your mood will also change. If you rewire your thought patterns that you're not deserving of love, your behaviors that are supporting that belief will change, and therefore your emotions. And so DBT is a branch of CBT, and DBT stands for dialectical behavioral therapy. And it has a couple of different parts of it. It's typically a pretty intensive treatment, as you'll hear, but what I've kind of taken away, because it's applicable to everyone, is the DBT skills. So the first part of DBT is DBT skills education, and you kind of sit in a classroom with other teens or adults if you're an adult doing DBT. Which, kind of going back to how it started, it was started by a woman named Marsha Linehan at the University of Washington, and it was initially developed for adult patients with borderline personality disorder, people that were really struggling with extreme emotions, suicidality, really struggling to form strong relationships, impulsivity, all of these things, which are also present in a lot of other different mental health challenges, whether that's depression or anxiety or eating disorders, all of these things it's been clinically studied to have a positive effect on. And so that's another great thing about DBT, is that when you do talk therapy, it's kind of the results are a bit up in the air, because you don't really, there's no clinical studies necessarily proving that your therapist will have a positive outcome. DBT is down to pretty much a science and a very set collection of protocols. And that's why it has really strong outcomes for specifically adolescents struggling with depression and anxiety, as well as a whole bunch of other things, but we're focusing on that. And so it is proven to be effective and improve depression, anxiety, suicidality, all these kinds of things. So going back to the different components, the first one is the skills education. And there's this giant book of DBT skills, and it's broken down into modules of emotion regulation, distress tolerance, mindfulness, and interpersonal effectiveness. And these are all different skills that when we're really struggling, we create really maladaptive coping mechanisms to get love and connection and support and maintain a basic level of emotion that is not completely miserable for us. And so DBT reteaches you how to do these things effectively and in a healthy manner, and have healthy relationships and be able to regulate your emotions and tolerate distress when it comes up and stay present. And so these are all things that we most of the time automatically do if you're living effectively or in having great mental health. You're probably doing a lot of these things. DBT just really teaches it to individuals that have kind of forgotten how to do these things, which is totally normal when you're really struggling. The next component of DBT is individual therapy, and that's for adolescents. A lot of the time looks like one-on-one time with a therapist, and then also family therapy. That's where you kind of navigate any challenges that come up during the week, bigger issues that you might be experiencing, all of that kind of stuff is individual therapy. And then the next part is phone coaching. So you have access to your therapist 24/7 if you go through a crisis to get skill support. And that's something that's really helpful for individuals that are really struggling. And then the last part comes from a belief in DBT that therapists need support too. So your therapist sits on a board of other clinicians, and they all work together to consult on cases and make sure that your therapist is taking the right treatment approach and you're getting the best care possible. And so that's kind of DBT. And from there, I really pulled the skills because they're so helpful to so many people. So I'm not offering DBT treatment or therapy, just teaching some skills that I learned in DBT treatment and in that form of therapy that are really helpful and can be implemented by anyone, but are not a substitute for therapy by any means. But to give you an idea of a skill and what that looks like, there's this skill called in the distress tolerance model, which I think is really fun to teach, because people a lot of the times are really skeptical about therapy and coping skills. And this is one where it scientifically works. You can't be like, I don't know if that deep breathing is really going to work. I don't know if like that changing my thought pattern will be effective. This one 100% scientifically works. And so in the distress tolerance module, these skills are used to bring you down from an extreme level of distress. So when you're in a crisis and having a distress that's like an 80, 90 out of 100, you would use these skills. And they're not for 24/7 usage, because then they lose their effectiveness. But when you're really struggling with an argument or a panic attack, or you're really sad, all of these really strong emotions, this is when you would use these. So the TIP skill, it's an acronym that stands for temperature, intense exercise, paced breathing, and paired muscle relaxation. So what these different letters do, and what these different things do, is they physiologically lower your level of distress, and they decrease the physiological markers of distress, whether that's clenched muscles, increased heart rate, increased breathing, and lower it so that you're no longer consumed by your physical sensations and you're taken out of that fight or flight mode, and you can then more logically proceed with how you're going to cope with the situation. the temperature sort of part of the skill comes from something called your mammalian diving reflex, which is connected to your vagus nerve, which runs under your eyes, and it's in your neck and on your wrist and on your chest. But what you do is you take a bowl of ice water and you submerge your face in the ice water for about 30 seconds when your heart rate is really increased, when your breathing is really rapid. And because we're mammals, we can't breathe underwater. And so our body has a way of lowering our heart rate when we go underwater. And so when you come into contact with cold water, your vagus nerve stimulates your mammalian diving reflex, and it lowers your heart rate and your breathing rate so that you're not overproducing carbon dioxide and you don't suffocate and drown. And so you can use the same reflex to help you when you're struggling in a crisis. So when you submerge your face underwater for 30 seconds, your heart rate lows, your breathing rate slows, and you can do it a couple times through. You can come up, you can take a breath of air and then go back in, but your physiological distress will decrease between when you first submerge your face and then after practicing.
That's so cool. Yeah, mm-hmm. That's so cool.
And then the next part of the skill is intense exercise. And so similarly,
there it is.
Decrease those physiological markers of distress by doing really intense exercise, whether that's sprints or squats or push-ups, things that really push you to the max. This is not like, let's do a wall sit. This is like, you are really, really going for it here. Maybe like some boxing or something like that. And so what you're doing is you're raising your heart rate further in exercise, and your body is not meant to maintain that level of output for a long period of time. So when we exercise, our heart rate increases and then your body quickly brings it back down. And if it doesn't, it's a medical condition. I don't know what it's called, but it would rush you to the hospital and it would be a problem. So when we raise our heart rate with exercise, it lowers your heart rate and it lowers it below what that initial level of distress was, and what you were experiencing when you were having those high emotions, when your heart rate is, I don't know what it would be, probably in the 100s somewhere.
180,
so,
yeah.
Yeah, and so it's been lowered from the exercise and the distress, and you're able to more calmly navigate the situation without having to be in fight or flight mode. And then the pace breathing and paired muscle relaxation do similar things. Pace breathing is focusing on lowering your heart rate, lowering your breathing rate, which in turn lowers your heart rate. So what you're doing is maybe breathing in for a 2 count, pausing, and then exhaling for a 3 count. And so having your exhale be longer, really focusing on your breath, is kind of a grounding moment, and decreasing your heart rate, your breathing rate, coming out of fight or flight mode, being able to more effectively navigate the situation. And paired muscle relaxation, again, tied to your breathing, but it really focuses on when we're really anxious or angry, we clench our fists, we hold a lot of tension in our muscles, and that's again part of fight or flight mode. But what you're doing is you're intentionally clenching your muscles on your inhale and then releasing them as you exhale. So you can kind of go and do like a body scan and start with like your calves and move all the way up to your head, but you are clenching those muscles, and as you release them, it releases not only from when you clench them, but some of that physical tension that you're holding. And you're also doing it with your breath, so you're able to decrease your breath rate and also decrease your heart rate and come out of that fight or flight mode and that physiological moment of distress. But there are probably, I don't know if there's hundreds, but there's well over 50 DBT skills and all things like that, which are help you navigate certain difficult situations and live your life effectively. And they're just so amazing. And I love teaching them, but that's a little quick teaser of how DBT works.
Thank you so much for that. That was like amazing for me to listen to. And I'm so glad that everyone got like this free little sneak peek into it. I am writing that down, the TIP acronym. It's so interesting, like learning about DBT, not something that I've done, but I have experience with CBT in the past. I was diagnosed with anxiety from a really young age. Those are all similar types of skills that I used to learn, obviously separately. But like the moving my body and getting my heart rate back down, I would do a lot of like those clenching muscles and releasing with breathing, and kind of like wrapping it up into this nice little like tool that is in your back pocket.
Pull from
go. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I just absolutely love that.
And like, it's so funny, self-care. Like whenever I see other people, like normally in a school setting who are struggling with a panic attack or something like that, I'm always like going, okay, we're gonna get some cold water here. You're gonna be okay, honey.
Yeah, I love that.
Even if you come into contact with someone else who's struggling and they don't know, it feels like you're dying when you're having a panic attack.
Yeah. So
they don't know how to navigate that. If you can just be like, hey, I want you to put these cold paper towels under your eye and just keep breathing. I know this is really hard, but it's gonna be okay and this is gonna help. Like it, just being able to have those tools that you can support someone else, even if you don't know them, it's such a great gift and something that they'll be eternally grateful for. Because again, it feels like you're dying. Everything is like crazy.
Yeah.
So to have someone else there that can just offer support rather than like, I don't know, if someone came up to me and was like, just take a deep breath, I would be like,
go away. You're fine. Yeah.
I'd be like, no, I'm not okay.
I'm not this fine. Is- yeah.
Yeah, we're someone that's like, this is what you're gonna do, this is gonna help. And every single time I've done that to someone, it has helped. They've been thankful for that, because again, it physiologically works. And so it's a great thing to be able to pull out of your back pocket and support someone else in the moment.
I mean, with mental health, there's so little tangible treatment. You know, it's therapy. Obviously, medication is there for those who need it, but to have something like, you know, an Advil for a stomach ache, you've got this almost tangible tool to just pull out of your back pocket. So I'm glad that everyone who's listening gets that little treat now. Mm-hmm. And
that's what I loved about DBT is therapy. Yeah. A lot of the times it feels like you're stumbling through the darkness.
It's conceptual. Yeah.
These are skills. It's like, okay, when you want to advocate for something, you're going to use this skill. When you want to validate someone to improve your relationship, you're going to use this skill. When you're feeling overwhelmed, you're going to distract yourself using these 7 different ways of distracting
and for yourself. Yourself and others. It's amazing. Yeah.
It's so concrete. It doesn't feel like you're stumbling blindly. And so for people that really struggle with like control or understanding how therapy is going to help them or lacking trust, it's just like the most amazing thing. I love it.
I love that. Everyone on the podcast knows this, but I'm like super type A too. Probably coming from my OCD tendencies and anxiety. So that is like satisfying to me. Just have like an acronym or like something that I just know like for a fact, like, let me just do this. Like as when I was little, my mom would always do the 5 things you can see, 4 things you can hear, like that type of thing. It's that same tool during a panic attack or whenever you need it. It's just there for you. And I love that. And I loved learning about DBT. I'm such like a nerd about it now. I'm going to go re-listen to like all of your podcast episodes about
it's
it.
So
and I'm
much
so
fun.
Glad.
And it's like a secret world whenever people are like, you know, DBT. Yeah. It's so fun and you connect. And so
I love that.
I love it.
Yeah. So then going right from therapy, perfect transition. If someone is struggling currently, I think, I know in my own journey, I have felt like it's difficult to find a therapist, find the right outlets for help without like having to ask my parents, and like navigating then with your family. And it's just a lot to try to figure out on your own. And you just want to get to that result in that place of therapy right away. So do you have any tips of how to appropriately reach out and find that help for someone who needs it?
Yes. So first, therapy can be a difficult thing to find a therapist that works for you, and it's a relationship and you're not going to mesh with everyone. You're not going to vibe with everyone. So you shouldn't feel forced to have a connection with your therapist. If you're not feeling it, just be like, hey, I appreciate the work that we've done, but this isn't going to work. I'm going to find someone else. And that's totally okay. Totally normal. I would so much rather you go and switch therapists 3 times and spend 3 weeks in a session that you don't feel like you're getting anything from, because you'll eventually find that person that works for you. As far as finding therapy, I do think when you're an adolescent, talking to your parent is an important part. You don't have to talk about why you want to go to therapy. You could even just be like, hey, I'm feeling really stressed with school and I really want to learn some skills to help me navigate that. Or I'm having some, you could like totally, I'm not promoting lying here, but just be like, I'm having a lot of like conflicts at school with my friends and I want to just like learn how to navigate that better. When reality, it's like you're really annoyed with your parents and you need a therapist, like figure out how to like help you survive until you go to college. So pulling out things that are less stigmatized and being like, I think I'm like clinically depressed. You could be like, I just want to learn how to navigate my school stress. And then you get into therapy and you can totally dive into how to navigate depression and a treatment plan for that. So don't feel pressured to completely share everything you're hoping to navigate with your parents. I think having openness and transparency is something that can be really helpful with your parents. But if you're not feeling comfortable, don't do it yet. Work up to that point and have your therapist kind of help with that. There are a lot of different online therapies. I work with a company on the podcast called Teen Counseling. And so it's part of BetterHelp, but it's specifically for teens. And they let you go on and fill out a survey, and they send your parents an email to approve you working with a therapist. But I did it myself, and it's like a super simple email. And it's like, this is Teen Counseling. We are an online therapy service. Your child is working with a therapist. Please approve the process. And it says nothing about what you're hoping to focus on or why you want to go to therapy. And so that is something which I think also protects your privacy. And if you can't find a therapist locally, virtually, that's another option. I think another route to go is to go to your guidance counselor and ask them for therapy recommendations. And then they can kind of be that bridge and be like, talk to your parents, like, hey, I think it could be helpful for Sadie to see a therapist. These are some of my recommendations. Let me know if you want me to help you set up this process. And then it doesn't necessarily have to come from you, and it kind of holds more weight because it's coming from another adult, and they can also play the school stress card if they need to. And so those are a couple different ways you can kind of navigate therapy and get therapy without having to like go up to your therapist and like or up to your parents and spill everything that you're currently experiencing. But I always tell people to look for a psychologist and make sure that they're practicing either CBT or DBT, because these are evidence-based treatments and you're working with a doctor. I'm sure there are great therapists out there that are not doctors, but I feel like your chance of effective therapy is higher if you're on the get-go looking for a psychologist. So I always recommend doing that, especially with online services, because it's just such a larger pool of individuals. But yeah, that would be my advice for finding a therapist.
I love that tip. I definitely feel like with teens especially, it can be so hard because you do kind of have to go through your parents at this point, mm-hmm. just especially in a medical sense, like insurance-wise, like you have to use them to set up this appointment. So that little tip of saying like, yeah, it's just about school stress, mm-hmm. like that's it. Or like one of my friends,
I'm worried about going to college. I want to figure out how I can get ready for that big life change.
Yeah.
Perfect reason.
Like
go. Yeah.
Test prep or, you know, anything like that. Yeah. Yes. I love that little, I never would have thought of that. So I love that people have, again, another little tool to have in their back pocket if they want to pull it out. So Sadie, you're amazing. I am so grateful that I was able to have you on today. I learned so much personally. I will be listening back to this episode multiple times and taking notes. You are so knowledgeable and so inspiring, especially as someone literally my same age, both off to college next year. I'm so excited I got to meet you even virtually. And I'm just so excited that everyone got to listen today. So just to finish off, do a last little plug for your platforms, your podcast, so people can follow you too.
Yeah. So you can follow me on Instagram at @ShePersistedPodcast. And all of my information for any other socials is on my website, ShePersistedPodcast.com, and all of the different links for all the different platforms, more about DBT, more resources, all teen mental health things. And then you can listen to She Persisted on all of the podcast platforms. Just search She Persisted and it'll come up.
Well, thank you so much again. You're amazing.
Of course.
With that, I will conclude today's episode. Thank you so, so much for listening, as always. If you did enjoy listening today, please leave a rating or subscribe to That Girl's Going Places wherever you listen to podcasts. It would really support me. And feel free to reach out at That Girl's Going Places podcast on Instagram with any questions that you have for a future Q&A segment or with any topic requests for future episodes. I love you all so much. I will talk to you again in the next episode, and I really hope that you have an amazing day.